good? What's good? It's C. Wood. Back at you again with another hard-hitting episode of Ball About the South with C. Wood. Ball About the South, that sports podcast where it's real sports, real Southern flavor. I am Kerry Wood, but call me C. Wood for short. At C. Wood on sports on Twitter and IG is where you can find me. And this is the latest, greatest episode of Ball About the South. And I definitely want to thank you for joining me and giving me a listen here once again. If you're this first time that you have joined me here on Ball About the South, the podcast is basically just what it sounds like. We talk ball and we talk about all the ball here in the South, basically the Southeastern United States, kind of an SEC footprint. Obviously, we talk a lot of SEC sports. We talk the NBA, NFL, college football, college basketball, HBCUs. We talk a little bit of all of that. We'll throw in some Major League Baseball here and there. Whatever, we talk about it here on Ball About the South. So please, if you like what you hear, I would definitely appreciate you liking, subscribing, sharing. You know, let some other people know about Ball About the South. Anyway, man, we got a jam-packed show again here for you today. The last two or three shows that we've done here have been NBA heavy, and this one's no different. You know, we've transitioned from the playoffs to the NBA Finals, and from the Finals to the NBA draft, and from the NBA draft to the NBA offseason, which obviously includes free agency and all of that. We've done all of that transitioning. So, and there really, truly has not been a lot to talk about necessarily on the NFL front, really. Not a lot of huge deals going on there. You have the Dalvin Cook situation, which is becoming a little bit interesting. Will he be going back to the Minnesota Vikings, or will he possibly become a Miami Dolphin? We'll see about that. You know, a couple other little things here and there, but nothing really major going on about the NFL. It's been very quiet. It's been, you know, kind of, I don't know, maybe as quiet as I've ever seen it on the NFL front, which is kind of crazy. But that quietness will be gone here very soon. We got these camps are starting to set up here in the next week or so, or at the most 2 weeks. So, yeah, it's going to be heating up really quick. The New York Jets, one piece of news that did come out, the New York Jets will be the team on Hard Knocks. So we'll get to see AR-8. It's not AR-12 anymore. Aaron Rodgers and company doing their thing with Hard Knocks. So that's going to be interesting to see just how that goes. A lot of big time expectations for the New York Jets this coming season. Will they be able to fulfill those expectations? We'll see. You know, other than that, man, so, and then really, I guess probably the other biggest question mark out there for me right now, especially if you're a Tennessee Titans fan, is what about D-Hop, DeAndre Hopkins? Is he going to, you know, when is he going to sign the dot? When and where is he going to sign the dotted line? On the dotted line, I should say, I guess. But a lot of people are still hoping, including myself, that D-Hop chooses the Tennessee Titans. I think that would be a huge help to that football team. Obviously, a guy like Ryan Tannehill, but I think it would also help a guy like Treylon Burks. I think it would probably kind of help a guy like Derrick Henry. It would help an offensive line that needs some help. So, you know, that would be huge if the Tennessee Titans could have that happen for them. But we'll see how it goes. Anyway, man, like I said, so really not a lot to talk about on the NFL front. Like I said, not a lot going on with college football. Again, we are into the media days season right now. The Big 12 is doing their thing. The SEC will convene in Nashville next week. kind of got all of the schedules and all the players that are going to be there with whatever coach, with their respective coach anyway. So all of that has kind of been squared away here as that gets underway, I think, Monday afternoon. And for me, man, that is the start. That is, to me, is the start of the football season, because at that point, we're only a couple weeks away from NFL preseason games. At that point, we'd be a month or less than a month away from week zero in college football. So it's coming. Another piece of news that's gone on since I joined you last, the UAB Blazers and teams out of Conference USA, Texas San Antonio, UTSA, North Texas, Rice, Charlotte, all of those schools have made their move into the American Athletic Conference from Conference USA, so they are full-fledged AAC members. That piece of news, obviously, is huge, I think, in a lot of ways, but we'll see how it goes with this next round of expansion coming up, which there's going to be a next round. Memphis, obviously, is a team that they're a school that wants out. We kind of talked about that in our last episode. We'll see how that goes. But at least this season and probably the next couple seasons, I think they'll be around in the American Athletic Conference. And I think this is a good football league. I think it's going to be a lot better than a lot of people give it credit for being. You got Tulane, who did really well last season, obviously. Just ask USC, who they beat in the Sugar Bowl last year. I think it was the Sugar Bowl. Whatever bowl game it was, Tulane won that game. I mean, it was a crazy game where Tulane had to come back or whatever late in the game. But I think that league is going to be a lot better than some people may give it credit for being. So we'll talk a little bit more about the AAC as we go forward, as well as the SEC. And just about, we'll talk about most of the leagues around here. Also, we'll definitely get in touch with our HBCUs, as we always do. Just a couple quick headlines, man. I want to congratulate my Birmingham Stallions for winning their second consecutive USFL championship. Huge performance there, beating the Pittsburgh Maulers 28-12. My man Alex Magoo, the quarterback, doing his thing. He turned out to be the MVP of the USFL this season. I think this dude should get a shot on the NFL roster. I mean, I think he's had one shot before when he was a lot younger with the Seattle Seahawks. Didn't quite work out. I think he should get another shot somewhere. I just really do. This dude has shown some elusiveness out of this world. I mean, he was almost impossible for the defenses to bring him down, whether or not they had, they were having flushed out of the pocket or whatever, and he would just find a way to get the ball downfield or find a way to break a few tackles or whatever, and then the next thing you know, he's off to the races. This dude was doing it all. And I tell you what, I was down on Alex Magoo earlier this season, especially, I guess, kind of more last season and into the first part of this season. And, he took over. It was really kind of crazy with the Stallions. If you're not familiar with what's going on with them the last two seasons, Jamar Smith took over for Alex Magoo, who was injured in last season, the 2022 season. Magoo was named starting quarterback, but he got hurt in the first game. Jamar Smith took over for him, and really, except for maybe like a couple quarters at most, did not relinquish the starting job. And, of course, the Stallions went on to win the championship. So, Jamar Smith, he gets the starting nod coming in here to the 2023 season. And then he gets hurt game one. And Magoo takes over for him. And Jamar Smith, man, his injury was one of those where he was out for the season. So, Magoo, had the quarterback position for the rest of the season. And I'll tell you what. He progressively got better and better as the season went on, and so did the Birmingham Stallions en route to their second consecutive USFL championship. And a lot of players on that team are going to get looks. The place kicker for the Stallions has already been picked up by the Cowboys, and that's a smart thing because we know the Cowboys' place kicking was horrible last year, the last couple seasons. So he is already headed to Dallas. CJ Marable, one of the running backs I saw, was picked up. I'm not sure who picked him up. I missed that. And there's some more players on the Stallions to me that should be picked up. One of those is Jay Sternberger. I mean, this dude's a tight end, and he was just almost unguardable. I mean, no one could do anything with this dude. No secondary, no linebacker or whatever. And he was one of those guys that could line up anywhere. I mean, he was their tight end, but they could line him out wide. They could line him in the slot. They could, you know, kind of put him in the backfield and kind of use him as a H-back type guy or whatever. That's very versatile. And just absolutely couldn't. I mean, no one could handle this dude. They could not. He was the biggest weapon for the Stallions. He opened up a lot of things for the other receivers as well as Magoo. And again, huge way for the Stallions to end that season. Again, it's a successful season in my opinion for the USFL and for the XFL. Because the object of what they're trying to do, the key is for them to get players ready for the NFL, or at least to give them more of a shot to be seen and hopefully be picked up by the National Football League. And that's what it's doing. I mean, the TV ratings, I think, have been pretty good. The championship game this season was down a little bit from last season, the ratings were, but I mean, they're still doing, I think, solid numbers when you compare them up against like Major League Baseball games and the MLS. And that's who they're competing against. A lot of people are making it like they're competing against the NFL. They're not competing against the NFL. The NFL's not in session right now. So, really good stuff from the USFL and the XFL. USFL will have a Season 3. Definitely looking forward to that. We don't talk a lot of baseball here. But every now and then I have to throw it out there. And I'll tell you what an all-star game we had this past week. Tuesday night was a good game. It wasn't the best, okay? You know, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that would like to see more offense in these all-star games, okay? But I thought it was a well-played game. I thought it was really good. And you had the game-winning home run there by the guy from Florida Marlins there in the bottom of the eighth inning to win that game for the National League. The first time they had won a game in this All-Star game in 11 seasons. I mean, that is just insane to think in an All-Star game that one of the teams has gone 11 seasons without winning a game. And this is just one long streak that they've had. There was, a longer streak back in like the 80s or so, or maybe the 90s, where the National League couldn't win one against the American League. It's really strange when you sit there and look at it like that. But they were able to get this one done this season. And I thought it was a pretty good All-Star game. But the home run derby, man, if you missed it, that's all I can say is you missed a treat. That's all I can say. I mean, it was another showing. It was more evidence of why the home run derby is absolutely the best appetizer to any all-star game, no matter what the sport is. You sit there and you think about the NBA. Now, it used to be the NBA with the slam dunk contest and all that. The home run derby has surpassed the NBA right now. The all-star Saturday night, I still watch it. I still enjoy it for the most part. Don't get me wrong. But the home run derby has surpassed the NBA. They just have. You know, you sit there and you look at the performances we saw the other night. And this dude, Adley Rutschman, I mean, he comes on from Baltimore. And a lot of people have never heard of this dude. Never heard of him, I'm sure. Right? He comes up and, you know, not only does this dude hit balls up into the upper deck, he hits 27 home runs, I think, in the his round one performance or whatever. not only did he, like I said, was he hitting just deep bombs there in the ballpark there in Seattle, but this dude hit them from both sides of the plate. Crazy. He hit right-handed and left-handed. Crazy, but it wasn't enough. It was not enough, because right behind him came the hometown kid, Julio Rodriguez, the reigning Major League Baseball Rookie of the Year. He comes up and hits 41 home runs, which ended up being the most any player has ever had in one round in the home run derby. Unbelievable, man. I mean, it's just crazy. And it was just absolutely crazy to sit there and watch that. And he didn't even win the home run derby. It was my man Vlad Guerrero Jr. His dad, one of my favorite players ever, Vladimir Guerrero, the guy that probably the best bad ball hitter I've ever seen. Vlad Guerrero Jr., he's not the bad ball hitter his dad was, but this dude has been plenty good in his career. He goes on, he wins the home run derby. So now father and son both have home run derby championships. It was just really a great night to watch baseball there on Monday and Tuesday night. I really enjoyed it. And now we get ready for the second half, man. Gonna be very interesting to see how all that turns out there. So we'll talk some baseball here and there. Not a lot, but we'll talk some here and there. We'll definitely keep up with the Braves, the Tampa Bay Rays, the Florida Marlins. Florida Marlins, all of which are doing very well this season. The Braves and the Rays are probably, well, they both have the best records in the game in their respective leagues. And I don't think it's any question, really, that these are probably the two best teams in baseball. You'll get arguments from several teams, don't get me wrong. But then you sit there and look at the Miami Marlins, they're not far behind those two teams. So really good stuff going on in our neck of the woods. They're on the diamond. Really good stuff there going on in the All-Star game the other night. Really enjoyed all of that. Anyway, man, but again, the meat of this particular episode is going to be the NBA. Like I said, it's going to be a heavy NBA show. We're going to get to it when Ball About the South continues. Okay, y'all, let's get back into it. Ball About the South continues, and we're going to get into this NBA talk. We're going to talk some NBA free agency, some of the moves that we've seen so far, some of the more impressive ones or whatever, some not so impressive, and then, of course, we'll talk a little bit of summer league and all of that going forward. One thing I do want to say is I do want to get into the Houston Rockets, and I think that's where we'll start with this segment here. A lot of chatter about my favorite team, man. It's really kind of odd to see. It's good to see it. Don't get me wrong, but it's very odd. Because I've been, here the last three seasons, I guess. It has been an extremely difficult time for to be a Houston Rockets fan, to be honest with you. I think things would have been a lot better if, just even with the losing, if we kind of knew what the direction was. Obviously, we lost the head coach. Steven Silas was fired. Now we have Ime Udoka as the head coach, which I think it's an upgrade, but again, time will only tell on that. It's been kind of rough, man. Let's be real about it. And so to see people outside of the Rocket circle, showing some, like they're really feeling what's going on in Houston, is really It's a little bit different. Let's just be real about it. But I think it's well earned. I think what we're seeing in Houston is you're seeing a possibility of a team that's really on the come up, maybe something similar to what we're seeing in Sacramento. We can only hope we could at least see something like that in Houston. But, man, it's so we got such a long way to go, and we still really have not seen anything that really proves anything yet, because all of this success or whatever that we're looking at here the last week or two, we still haven't hit the court for real. We're still talking about Summer League. We had a huge couple games by Jabari Smith, which was a refreshing thing. Was a refreshing sight, no question about it. But I'm not one of these guys that sat here and called Jabari Smith a bust last season. I thought Jabari Smith did just fine, in my opinion, and he did what you wanted him to do, or at least what you want most of your rookies to do, is to get better as the season goes along, and that's exactly what he did. Jabari Smith was one of the better rookies in the league. I mean, obviously, Paolo Banchero was probably the best rookie overall all season last year, but Jabari Smith caught up to him a little bit, I think, toward the end of the season, and that's what you want to see. I mean, you know, Jabari Smith, not the best numbers, not quite 13 points a game last season, just a shade under 8 rebounds or whatever. The rebounds were okay. You'd like to see more points, but I can give you, you don't want to sit here and make excuses, but I think I can give you a couple of valid reasons why Jabari Smith didn't average more points. He didn't average more like 15 or 16 points a game instead of the 12.8 or 13 points a game that he actually did average. I mean, you sit there, the issues at point guard are the number one thing with the Rockets. We had Kevin Porter Jr., you had Ty Washington, who was in and out. He had some injury issues. They both had injury issues. Then you had a guy named Dacian Nix that no one really liked in the Houston Rockets fan base or anything. a lot of people were trying to figure out why in the world was he even on the roster. Forget the fact that he was getting major minutes at point. I mean, you just didn't have anybody that was really running the show. You didn't have a floor general out there getting the team into their right sets, getting the ball in the right place to the right person in the right location on the floor at the right time. You had none of that. And when I'm supposed to sit here and say, oh, well, oh, man, Jabari Smith is just a bust. I mean, we already knew coming into his career, the start of his career last season, that he was not a guy that put the ball on the floor as well as some others. I mean, it's not that he couldn't do it, but that was not a strength of his game. So how in the world was this dude supposed to create his own shot? Because that's what he basically had to do. So I was happy with what I saw with Jabari Smith, considering the circumstances. So now you get up in the Summer League and he goes, I forget what the shooting percentage was in the first half of game one, but he only had 4 points at the half. And of course, man, the bust tweets were flowing. The laugh emojis were flowing. It was crazy on Twitter looking at the Jabari Smith, the reactions to what he was doing in the first half. But then the second half came, in which he scored 29 points. And, of course, the last of those 29 points was the three that won the game for the Rockets. The inbound pass from Tari Eason, which was perfect. Jabari Smith catches the ball just at the top of the key, turns around and just shoots the thing and knocks it down with 0.6 seconds left to win the game. He ended up with 33 points in that game. Fast forward to the game two, he goes up for another 38 points in that game. Of course, then, at that point, obviously, at that point, okay, the narrative is, oh, well, he shouldn't have been playing in the Summer League. Yeah, this guy was the number three pick overall last season in the first round. No way he should be playing in the Summer League. He's way better than these guys. I'm like, wait a minute, now you said he was a bust. You just said he was a bust, so now he's all of a sudden it's unfair that he's playing in the Summer League. Which one is it? So he's averaging a cool 35 and a half points per game. He's still not 20 years old, mind you. But yet, still had people talking about, oh, he shouldn't have been in the summer league and all that. Whatever. I mean, look, the whole thing is this. This dude is well on his way to being, I think, a really, really good basketball player in this in the NBA. I think he's going on his way to being one of the best power forwards that we're going to see in the NBA for the next 10 years or so. I think that's where he's headed. He shoots the three ball well enough. He's not the best shooter, but he shoots it well enough for me. And he's proven that he can put the ball on the floor at times. But I think he's starting to prove that sweet spot for him, much like Kevin Durant, is that mid-range game. And he's going to be able to shoot it over the top of a lot of players that he plays against on a nightly basis. And that's what you like to see. I'm loving to see it, man. And I'm not surprised. A lot of people acting so surprised at what Jabari Smith was doing. I'm not the least bit. And this is Auburn Tiger, man. I'm an Alabama fan. Okay, you know how I feel about Auburn, but look, I got to keep it real. And that's what I see out of Jabari Smith. So, I mean, that's the first kind of piece of this puzzle for the Rockets. I mean, you sit there, obviously you had Jalen Green, who was, for me, when you sit there and look at this dude from the mid-range, unbelievable shot maker. I think I think that's what he's going to be. Obviously, that he's going to have to work on his perimeter game a little bit more. But I think mid range, getting to the hoop, things of that nature. This dude is really creative. I think you sit there and you look at guys. Kevin Porter Jr. could be the odd man out. We'll see. Tari Eason, who has had a strong summer league again this season, they've shut him down. He played those first two games and played lights out, so they've shut him down. He's going to be in that rotation big time. Alperen Sengun, who's basically the center for this basketball team. There's so much to his game. A lot of people thinking that this guy could be like the next Nikola Jokic. Maybe not as good as him, but doing some of the same type stuff that the Joker does for the Nuggets. This guy can do some of those things for the Rockets. And then, of course, you had the free agency moves where the Rockets picked up Fred VanVleet. Huge deal, 3 years. $130 million, which is a lot of money. Let's just be real about it. A lot of money. But it's not as bad as it may seem because the third season is actually a team option. So it's really a two-year deal. You sit there and look at it from that standpoint. And, of course, the huge trade where the Rockets really gutted a lot of their team, a lot of the players, including K.J. Martin, several other players to pick up Dylan Brooks. So really that's going to be your starting lineup. Starting up here in October when we tip this thing off for real. To be honest with you, I'm warming up to this Dylan Brooks thing a lot more than I was a few months ago when this kind of first started, putting it out there that this trade might go down. Well, that the Rockets were interested in Dylan Brooks. I was not for that at all when it was first announced. But I feel a lot better about it now because, I think if he can stay away from some of the technical fouls and some of the other things that goes on with this game, other than that, we all know this dude is a good basketball player. We all know that he is a lockdown defender. We all know that he can, while he, has some bad shot selection there, to say the least, we all know that he can put the ball in the basket from time to time as well. But that's not, you would think, with this basketball team, with the addition of VanVleet, Jabari Smith, Jalen Green, even Cam Whitmore, who the Rockets kind of, a lot of people think, stole in the draft at the 20th spot. You look at Amen Thompson, they had to shut him down because of an injury, but he had a really good first game there at the Summer League. I mean, think of all of those guys. Maybe even bringing a guy like KPJ, Kevin Porter Jr. off the bench. The Rockets could have a good little nucleus of players that can put the ball in the hole, so it may not be that big a deal whether or not Dillon Brooks can score or not. So, man, you know, it just really gets really exciting to think about what this team could be going forward. Obviously, it's not, you know, they still very young, but they do have some adults in the locker room. That's one of the things that Ime Udoka and the general manager, Raphael Stone, were looking for. That's what they wanted. They wanted adults in the locker room, and they pulled that off. And then I think they got better even with the guys around them, the youngsters. You know, Amen Thompson looks like he is going to be a player. So I'm excited, man. We have not tipped this thing off for real yet. We have to see how it goes. Obviously, the biggest deal in Summer League was Mr. Victor Wembanyama. Obviously, the Rockets lost out on him. So the Spurs get him. And I think it was pretty easily to predict this guy to kind of have a rough start to the Summer League. I mean, it's everything that was going on. You had this Britney Spears incident going on top of everything else. You think Victor Wembanyama didn't know that he was the focal point of everybody in Vegas? You think he didn't know the reason the Thomas and Mack Center was full to capacity was because of him? That's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure. So game one, this dude was not himself. I mean, it's just that simple. He just was not. But I think it's perfectly understandable. I just really believe that. That in addition to the fact that really the Spurs really didn't have a lot of, obviously didn't have their main players in there like all the other teams. Not a lot of good guard play going on. Not really, getting him in the spots that were comfortable for him, getting the ball where he could do something with it, things of that nature. None of that was really done in game one. They did a lot better job of that in game two. I think one of the other things that I saw in game one was Victor really kind of trying to take the ball a little bit too much and then get the ball as deep as he possibly could. This guy still got to get in the weight room. I think, that can be overlooked when you sit there and look at this guy's talent. You sit there, you look at his height, his athletic ability, and say, man, you sit there and you're blown away by that, but you still sit there and forget this dude's body is not where it's going to need to be here going forward. And we saw that even against some of these guys they were playing against in the Summer League here this last Friday night. They were able to kind of take the ball away from him. They were able to, kind of knock him off his path. Things were not smooth flowing for him at all, trying to get all the way to the rim. So his adjustment, at least as far as I could tell, and at least in several of his shots, was that he, instead of trying to get all the way to the rim, he just said, look, I'm just going to take this jumper and I'm going to shoot it up over top of you. Obviously, no one else in the league is as tall as this dude. So that was a smart move. That was a smart that was definitely the smart investment to make. And the results were 27 points. And it's a much better showing for the number one overall pick. And then, of course, the Spurs shut him down. So, again, just really, really incredible stuff going on at Summer League there. And it was very entertaining in that second game, to say the least. Another player that had his issues at the start of Summer League was Brandon Miller. And it's the same thing. Not as much as Victor as far as the pressure, because, I mean, just the anticipation of the fans, the anticipation of the media for Victor coming into the NBA and all of that. Not on that level for Brandon Miller, but it wasn't far off. Especially when you sit there and you add in the fact that it's still, he still has this cloud of the murder hanging over him in Tuscaloosa or whatever. He still is not, I don't know when he's going to be able to escape that. And all the other things going on there. And then that on top of, again, Charlotte, their summer league team looking pretty awful. Maybe one of the worst summer league teams in Las Vegas this week. All of that just turned into a really bad thing for Brandon Miller. He just did not look himself. He just didn't. And now, of course, then he had all the bus calls and the bus tweets coming out, excuse me, for Brandon Miller on social media and all of that. And, man, I'm just like, I just don't understand it. I mean, when have we sat here and put so much emphasis on the summer league? People sitting there making determinations about some of these players after they've played two or three summer league games. It's some of the craziest stuff I've ever seen. I mean, we had people talking about Wembanyama after his first game. I mean, really? I just don't understand it. I really don't. I saw some Golden State fans on Twitter just last night talking about Cam Whitmore, the Rockets pick, the 20th pick again, the guy that a lot of people think was a steal for the Rockets that late in the draft. No one thought he would last past the lottery. Some people didn't think he'd last out of the top 10. And the Rockets get him at 20, and he's done, I thought he played pretty well in the summer league. He's averaging somewhere around 17, 18 points a game in the summer league as a 19-year-old. He's barely 19 years old. I think he was the youngest guy in the draft. And Golden State fans were like, okay, well, you know, we there were some that were saying they should have taken him in the first round. Of course, they didn't. I think Golden State picked where around 18 or 19 or somewhere in that range or whatever. And then there were some people saying, if you look at his shot selection, if you look at this and you look at that from him, I think we dodged a bullet. Dodged a bullet from what? What are you talking about? This dude has played three summer league games. How can you make that determination from three summer league games? The third of which, he was the best player on the floor, at least for the Rockets. He was the number one option. Jabari Smith had been shut down. Tyrese had been shut down. Amen Thompson had already been shut down. No one else out of the Rockets' nucleus is playing on that basketball team. So what is he supposed to do? He's supposed to get out there and just, I don't understand that kind of chatter. No matter what player we're talking about right now, it's way too early to make these determinations about 19 and 20-year-olds before we even get to training camp. It's ridiculous. So anyway, I mean, but again, that's my look at this thing. I love what I'm seeing from the Rockets, man. I really do, but it's kind of temper the expectations down just a little bit. Let's just see what we look like as we get into training camp and then into the start of the season. And then, you know, same thing with a guy like Brandon Miller. Same thing with a guy like Victor Wembanyama. We see a lot of really good performances from a lot of other players around the league. Nick Smith Jr. had a huge game for Charlotte. He is the guard out of Arkansas now. At the start of last season in college basketball, Nick Smith Jr. was really looked at as the better prospect than Brandon Miller. I don't think a lot of people are really even sitting there talking about that from a Charlotte Hornets perspective. All I'm hearing is people saying, they should have took Scoot Henderson. And it's possible the Hornets may have pulled off one of the steals of this draft and getting maybe two lottery picks in the first round. Two lottery picks, maybe even two. These were two guys projected to be in the top 10 in this draft just under a year ago. And all that people want to talk about is, oh, the Hornets should have drafted Scoot Henderson. Really? I mean, this is nothing against Scoot Henderson. I mean, Scoot Henderson looks like he is going to be all of that in a bag of chips. I'm not saying that he's not. Scoot Henderson may be the better player between he and Brandon Miller. I'm not saying that he's not. But that doesn't mean he was the best player for the Charlotte Hornets. I see a lot of people talking about, oh, man, you sit there and you draft need instead of the best player in a position like the Charlotte Hornets are in, that it's already a loss. I'm just not sitting here buying that necessarily. I'm not saying it's not going to turn out like that. It could. Let's just be real about it. It very well could. I just don't think that's going to be the deal. I don't think Scoot Henderson is, if he's better than Brandon Miller, I don't think he's that much better a player than Brandon Miller. And I think you sit there and you add a guy like Nick Smith Jr., who I thought was one of the steals in this draft out of Arkansas, to that mix. I think the Hornets did a hell of a job in the draft. Let's just see how they get it all to work with LaMelo Ball. That's going to be the issue. I mean, this is not going to be a thing where the Hornets make a jump like the Kings or anything like that right now. But I think that move could be a lot better than a lot of people are thinking it's going to be for them. We shall see. Anyway, man, we're going to take another quick break right now. We'll come back. We'll talk some more NBA. We're getting a couple of these other free agency moves. We're going to get into this Dame Lillard situation in the Miami Heat. A couple other things from Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all, man, let's get back into it, Ball About the South, and we're going to continue on with this NBA talk. One name, you know, I'm just really kind of just talking about Summer League here the last segment and everything. One name, well, actually two names. Two names that I failed to mention with SEC connections in Summer League. G.G. Jackson from South Carolina Gamecocks. Again, one of the youngest players drafted in this draft. He went second round. I thought, for me, I thought he could have been a first round talent toward the end of the first round. No one took him. He ended up going second round. Who was playing with the Memphis Grizzlies. They was selecting him there in the second round. Really haven't been having a good start to his summer league career. He had NBA career. He's starting out here in the summer league. This is his NBA career, not a summer league career. But he had 23-10 in his first game out of the box. He's really played well in those games that he's been out there. Really good looking. I was really surprised that he didn't get more of a look. Now, again, though, there was a lot of really good talent in this NBA draft that we just witnessed a couple weeks ago, but G.G. Jackson, I really thought was going to go a little bit higher than he did, and he's showing right now that a lot of teams might have made a little bit of a mistake. The Memphis Grizzlies are capitalizing, and he could fit right into that rotation possibly. Who knows? He's one of the younger players. Maybe I think he was at least, if not the youngest, the second youngest right there along with Cam Whitmore and Noah Clowney. All of those guys 19 years old. And, he's doing his thing so far. Another guy with an SEC connection that is doing really well so far in Summer League is Colin Castleton. Now, he's the big guy out of Florida, 7 foot. Really good skills around the rim as far as not really around the rim. I would say kind of in the mid-range. He's a good screener. Really good with the basketball in his hands. When you sit there and you really look at what Florida did offensively last season and really the season before last, they ran their offense through Colin Castleton. Point blank simple. I mean, this is no disrespect or there's no shot at the guard play for Florida. They weren't bad, but they weren't as good as I think that they wanted to, they thought that they could be. And you sit there and you look at Colin Castle, man. They ran the offense through him. And what do you look for right now in the NBA as far as bigs? Okay, especially when you sit there and you look at what the Joker just did in winning an NBA title. You look for those guys that you can kind of run offense to. You sit there and put the ball in their hands, and they can do something with it. They can facilitate. They can get their own. And Colin Castle is one of those guys. And the Lakers have him. And you sit there and you look at that roster for the Lakers. There's some room, I think, for a big. Maybe not initially where he would be with the Lakers, but I could definitely see if he continues his play like he has been, I could see him on a two-way deal where he's going, you know, going back and forth between the G League or whatever. A lot of teams looked over Colin Castle in this past draft, in my opinion. He needs to work on his perimeter shot a little bit. I mean, I say perimeter, I mean out to, you know, 20 feet, out to three. He can knock down the mid-range shot pretty good. And like I say, he can get to his points on the floor. He can be a very effective player. So I think that could be a really good pickup for the Los Angeles Lakers, who have done an excellent job. When you sit there and you think about free agency, you think about the draft, they have done an excellent job sitting there bringing in, keeping their guys like Reeves that, you know, a lot of people were talking about Reeves getting a $100 million deal, and they were able to get him for half that. You know, and all the other deals that they were able to strike and some of the other moves that they were able to make, you got to like what you see out of the Lakers. So I just wanted to throw those two names out there, G.G. Jackson, Colin Castleton. Those are two names I think you need to watch that could carve out spots. Who knows? Maybe in the rotation as far as G.G. Jackson is concerned from Memphis, and maybe a roster spot for a guy like Colin Castleton with the Lakers. I think that's something that we definitely need to watch. Anyway, we're going to get into this damn Lillard thing and this James Harden thing. Two huge names on the free agency path, free agency trail that are obviously, we don't know where they're going to be next season. This Damian Lillard thing is obviously the biggest story, but James Harden, where he's going to end up, is not far behind it. Both of those players have asked out. Damian Lillard from Portland, Harden from Philadelphia. It's going to be interesting to see. Now, we sit there and look at James Harden. We'll talk about him in just a minute. He's been most mentioned with the Clippers. So I'm not really sure if it's a thing where that's his preferred destination. That's the way I kind of took it at first, but I'm not really so sure about that, if that's his preferred destination. Obviously, he's from L.A., so that would kind of make some sense to me basketball-wise. I don't know if it makes sense to put him with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. We'll see how that works. We'll talk about him in just a few minutes. But let's get into this Dame Lillard thing, because the team that is most connected with him is the Miami Heat, which makes a lot of sense. When you sit there and you look at this Miami Heat deal, if they're able to land Damian Lillard, it makes sense pairing him up with Jimmy Butler. Just looking at that on paper, it makes sense. Because for me, the biggest weakness offensively for Damian Lillard is his ability to facilitate. That's just my opinion. I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm not saying that's not in his repertoire. But to me, that's his weakness. So pairing him up with a guy like Jimmy Butler, who can be a facilitator to a degree, makes a hell of a lot of sense in my opinion. You see, now you add a scorer that, you know, Jimmy Butler kind of needs, obviously, a guy that can get his own shot. Damian Lillard fits that bill, a guy that can stretch the floor. Damian Lillard maybe stretches, checks that box as well as anyone else not named Steph Curry, right? So all of those things make all the sense in the world. For me, that deal makes a lot of sense, period. To me, that is the destination where he should end up question is, does Miami have enough to return to Portland? That's the problem with Miami. I think that some kind of way you're going to see a third team in this deal. I really do believe, before I talk about any other scenarios or anything like that, I really think the deal with Miami is going to be the one that's going to go down. But it may take another team to make that happen. My thing is I'm not huge on. I've got to improve my knowledge on contracts and things of that nature. How they work and what deals work with what team and all of that. That's one thing I do not study enough. I definitely will sit here and acknowledge that. So I'm not really sure how the money works and all of that good stuff, but I think Tyler Hero going back to Portland and then you throw in a couple other guys and maybe some draft picks, it makes sense, but is that really enough for Portland? I don't know. A couple of other teams, now early on in this process, Dame Lillard mentioned it. Well, I don't know if it was Lillard himself, but it was reported that Lillard was interested in the Nets as well. The Nets have, I think, maybe a few more assets, possibly, but obviously, if you're the Portland Trail Blazers, you probably want Mikal Bridges in return, and obviously if I'm Brooklyn, I'm not doing that. Okay, not for a 33-year-old Dame Lillard. I mean, that's just me. I'm not doing that one. I'm going to, kind of go with what I got. But, again, that was one of the teams that was thrown out there. A team like Philadelphia makes sense. I mean, we're going to lose James Harden. So maybe that's the third team. Maybe they figure something out where Philadelphia is involved in this thing and Harden goes somewhere else and then Lillard goes either Miami or maybe if he goes to Philadelphia. See, that's the type of scenario I just don't think works as well, though. I don't like Dame Lillard paired up with Tyrese Maxey, Embiid, because who's your facilitator with that team? Who's your guy that's going to get Tobias Harris the ball where he needs to get it? Who's the guy that's going to get Tyrese? Even though Tyrese Maxey, we know, can create his own shot, it's possible that Tyrese Maxey could be their point guard somewhere down the line. I mean, there was rumblings about that, I think, and he's shown that he has some capabilities of playmaking or whatever as far as to get others involved. But for me, I think James Harden is the better facilitator. While I think that Dame Lillard is the better overall player, if you're looking for a guy that's going to get Joel Embiid the ball where he needs to get it, if he's going to get Tobias Harris the ball where he needs to get it, to me, James Harden is the better option. That's probably an unpopular opinion. I'm not scared to come out of here and say that. I mean, that's just my thoughts on that. I've got a couple of more unpopular opinions, to be honest with you. I think a lot of people think that Damian Lillard makes a lot of sense in Boston. In my unpopular opinion, I'm just not seeing it. not to the point of where I think that, if Boston brings in Damian Lillard, Boston brought in Damian Lillard, man. They brought Dame in. Yeah, that's my favorite to win the NBA Eastern Conference next season. I've got to put them as a favorite now over Milwaukee and, maybe Miami, depending on what they're able to do. Yeah, I don't think Damian Lillard pushes the envelope that much, man. I don't think he, pushes the meter up that much, in my opinion, especially if Boston's going to have to give up Jaylen Brown or whoever to get him. And again, the reason why for me is I just don't think Dame is as good a facilitator as, the Celtics probably would need him to be. Yes, he would be an excellent guy to take pressure off of Jason Tatum. Excellent. I mean, I, you know, offensively as far as that goes. But who's going to get the other guy's shots? You have Kristaps Porzingis. Who's going to get him shots? I mean, yeah, he can run pick and roll. He can kind of handle the ball a little bit out in the perimeter himself. You know, he can back down a player, turn around, shoot that little jumper over him at his height or whatever. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he can still do some things for you. I'm not saying that. But losing Jaylen Brown to get Damian Lillard, I mean, I understand Jaylen Brown's, inadequacies or whatever, his weak points in this game, handling the ball, things of that nature. But is that enough to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to take away the defense that Jaylen Brown gives us sometimes, his athleticism? Is that enough to bring Damian Lillard in? I don't know, man. Like I say, I know that's an unpopular opinion because I think a lot of people think they would work just fine. And then, you know, and look, I could be totally wrong about this. I could be totally wrong. But I just think that you sit there and you look at the Boston Celtics, they need someone that can be at least a facilitator, a guy that can get them in, settle them down, get them in their offenses. It's not a point guard. It's got to be somebody like a Draymond Green, somebody that you can put the ball in his hands and say, okay, yeah, okay, let's settle down. Let's get in our set. Okay, I'm going to give you the ball right here, Jason Tatum. This is where you can flourish. You know, take your shot right there or whatever. You know, I just don't know if Damian Lillard's that guy. And really, truly, man, in a way, again, and this is probably the most unpopular of these couple of unpopular opinions that I have here surrounding Damian Lillard. When you factor in his age, 33 years old, you factor in, again, like I said, he can get his own, but at the point guard position, his size, is he going to get everyone else theirs in some ways with his contract and all those things I just mentioned? I think he's a little bit overrated, man. I just really do. I don't see you putting Damian Lillard in Philadelphia and say, okay, let's go win a championship. I don't see you putting Damian Lillard in Boston and say, yep, man, let's go win a championship. I can see that maybe in Miami, depending on who they trade off to Portland. I can see that in a place like Milwaukee. The Bucks are obviously a team that I did not mention yet. I can see Damian Lillard working with that. I mean, obviously Drew Holiday, I would assume, would be involved in a trade like that. Drew Holiday, obviously, a better defender and all of that. For me, if I was the Bucks and with that scenario, I would stick with Drew Holiday. But I would get it. I could understand you sit there and say, okay, you know what? We'll go with Damian Lillard because you have other defenders around him that can, that can make up for Dame Lillard's deficiencies defensively. You have other guys. You have some other guys that can, I don't know if you have necessarily facilitators, but at least you have guys like Giannis that can get his own shot. Yeah, okay, yeah, I know he's a wrecking ball when he's going down the middle of the floor or whatever, and sometimes he doesn't know when to stop. Sometimes he doesn't know just when to pull up and shoot that jumper or something like that. But I think overall, Dame Lillard works in Milwaukee better than he would in Boston, better than he would in Philadelphia. What about the Clippers? I mean, that's another team that's been mentioned. Maybe straight up for Paul George. Possibly I've seen that scenario thrown out there. I think that works. But then after that, I mean, you sit there and you think about the Clippers. You think about all the injuries that they've gone through with Kawhi and Paul George. Would that be enough? Would that be enough with Dame Lillard? Dame Lillard and Russell Westbrook in the same backcourt? I don't know, man. I don't know. For me, Miami is the spot that works the best. You still have a guy that, again, I don't necessarily call Jimmy Butler a facilitator, but he has that in him. We saw it in the playoffs. He's not going to be a guy that's going to have 12, 13 assists per game, in a bunch of games or anything like that. But he's a guy that will sit there and be unselfish and get players their shots when he knows, especially when he knows his isn't going. That's just who he is. It works. So I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting to see how this thing works out. It just really is. James Harden, on the other hand, I mean, who knows? I mean, again, the name, the team that I've most prominently seen mentioned with him is the Clippers. And again, look, I mean, on paper, if James Harden could really be in shape, and then you talk about the Clippers being healthy, they have, I think, one of the more underrated centers. They have one of the more underrated centers in the league in Zubac. They have Marcus Morris. I think it's Marcus Morris. I get the Morris twins kind of mixed up sometimes. You have, obviously, Kawhi. You got Westbrook. You have, I think, enough. If they were to give up Paul George to possibly make a run, I don't know, man. I don't know. For me, the best scenario for Portland, if Miami is able, willing to come off a few draft picks, and if Portland's willing to take back a little less, the scenario that works for everyone, for Lillard, for the Heat, for the Blazers, is if he goes to Miami. That's just me. Let's look at some of the other things going on, man. NBA free agents, again, for me, I think the Lakers did really well. They are one of the teams that are winning NBA free agency. I don't think there's any question about that. One of the teams from my neck of the woods down here, the Atlanta Hawks. I'm not sure what the hell they're doing. I'm really trying to figure this out. I guess they're salary dumping, or maybe they're trying to set themselves up for a big move. There's a lot of rumblings going on the last few days that Pascal Siakam is available from the Toronto Raptors, which, obviously could make a big deal, could be a big time get for a team like the Hawks. They give up on John Collins, which, man, we knew that John Collins was a guy that they've been trying to trade, that they've been shopping for a while now, and they finally were able to do that. And from an Atlanta perspective, from a Hawks perspective, the trade just makes zero sense to me, man. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world to the Utah Jazz. I mean, they gave up next to nothing to bring in John Collins, for me, a guy that fits in to their, what they want to do, in my opinion, like a glove. And they send basically scraps back to Atlanta. Atlanta really, really wanted to get rid of this dude. I mean, the getting rid of salary, I understand that. Other than that, this whole thing with John Collins is just a major cluster, man. It was just a major cluster all the way around. There's no way that the Hawks should be losing this guy. There's just no way. He's too talented. He's the guy that can get out and shoot the perimeter shot. He's, you can play him at center. You can play him at the four. Pretty good mid-range guy. I don't get the move. I don't get it. And you compound that with DeJounte Murray, the huge contract that you give him, I think it was 4 years, $30 million per or whatever, something like that, $120-something million. I didn't like the move of them getting him in the first place. I just didn't think he was a good fit with Trae Young. And last season it didn't necessarily prove me wrong last season. Let's just put it that way. I mean, they had some flashes of pretty decent play. Obviously, they had some injury issues there for a little while. But other than that, DeJounte Murray and Trae Young did not prove that they were a good backcourt together, in my opinion. And so now you go and you re-up with him for 4 more years? So I'm thinking there's some method, hopefully, for Hawks fans' sake, I hope there's some method to their madness, because it doesn't make sense. I mean, I get the John Collins deal to a certain degree. I wouldn't have done it. I would have done everything I could to sit there and make that work, to me. But the DeJounte Murray thing, I don't get, man. I don't get it. Unless there's something, a trade coming down the pike here. Maybe Pascal Siakam. Maybe you include DeJounte Murray in that or something. Not really sure. We'll see how it plays out. I don't like these two moves for the Hawks. I like the draft. I think they did well there. But it's not a good look for the Hawks, in my opinion. When you look at some of the other teams, man, I like in the Southeast Division, I like what the Orlando Magic are doing. That team is going to be really long. That's the best way I could put it. So long on the baseline. They're going to be long out front with Cole Anthony. They bring in a guy like Anthony Black, 6'7", probably about 6'9", 6'10", with the afro out of Arkansas. I mean, he's got some things he's got to do to improve his game, but down the line, I think Anthony Black has a chance to be a really good ball player. Another one of those Arkansas Razorbacks. Kind of like some of the things I'm seeing out of Orlando. You look at the Washington Wizards, they re-signed Kyle Kuzma. They obviously brought in Jordan Poole in that Golden State deal where they sent Chris Paul packing to San Francisco. We all know about that one. So, you know, Jordan Poole, we'll see how that marriage works with him and Kyle Kuzma. Those are two faces of that franchise. Should be interesting. Talked about Charlotte. Again, a lot of question marks, but I do think those two draft picks could really do some good for them. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Still, I think you sit there and you look at it, Miami Heat are still the team to beat in the Southeast Division. We go to the Southwest. We talked about my Houston Rockets for a while. The huge news out of the Southwest is obviously Kyrie Irving getting that huge deal. And one thing I will say, I am happy that it is less than a guy like Fred VanVleet. 3 years, $126 million, I think is definitely a win for Kyrie Irving. Don't get me wrong. But it's at least a little bit less than Fred VanVleet. Fred VanVleet, this is a dude that was undrafted. He went through the G League. He's the first player ever to do that and get a $100 million contract. Kudos to him. I'm just glad to see that he's making more money. Slightly. Albeit slightly, than Kyrie Irving. Love Kyrie Irving's game. Love to watch him play. One of the best players I've ever seen do it, unquestionably. I just don't like the other parts of Kyrie Irving. And Dallas re-upping with this guy for 3 more years to team up with Luka. I like some of the other moves that Dallas has made. Derek Lively in the draft made a lot of sense to play, you know, come in as a big out of Duke. I like that move. I like some of the other moves that they've made to shore up their defense a little bit. I don't think it's enough to really make huge strides, but I think it gets them a little bit better. I just don't like this Luka Kyrie marriage. I just don't like it. It's you're not going to get a lot of defense out of it. I think Kyrie's not a bad defender. I think he's a better defender than a lot of people give him credit for being. When he really wants to be somewhere, Kyrie can get after it a little bit. But it's not a whole lot you're going to be able to do with Luka Doncic on the other side of that defense. It's just not going to be a good defense. You're going to have to rely on guys that can protect the rim, so at least they have addressed that to some degree. You look at the Spurs. We know about them, Wembanyama and all of that. We know about them. Again, the other two teams in the league, the Memphis Grizzlies, probably the two best teams in that division, the Memphis Grizzlies and the New Orleans Pelicans. Again, the Zion thing, we've talked about that before. No need to get into that right now. No need to get into that. Not a lot that the Pelicans had going on draft-wise or in free agency. Not really. They did re-sign Herb Jones, which was huge. Memphis Grizzlies have been very active, of course, bringing in Marcus Smart, which was, I mean, really a big-time deal. We'll see how that works out. His voice in the locker room is going to be really huge. You got to like what Memphis did. For me, I think Memphis comes out as the top dog. I think they are the best team in this division, at least as of today, right now. They've done enough for that. And, again, I think if you're a Memphis Grizzlies fan, you got to be very, very excited about the future of your basketball team there in the city of Memphis. Very much so. So, I mean, that's just my look at Dame Lillard, the James Harden situation, and all of that going on. Very, very interesting stuff. One thing I will say, my thoughts on Chris Paul going to Golden State, I know this is a little bit late. I know this happened a couple weeks ago, but I have not had a chance to address it. I like the move for Golden State if it's going to be Chris Paul being a guy playing 20 to 25 minutes. If it's Chris Paul coming off the bench. Other than that, I think the move would be very concerning. I don't think you can team up Chris Paul and Steph Curry too much in the backcourt defensively. Offensively, it would work, possibly. But I don't think that would work defensively. Getting rid of Jordan Poole. Obviously, you're giving up a lot of years, a lot of age there, a lot of athleticism. But one of the things that hurt Golden State was when Steph Curry went to the bench. You did not have that guy that could get the Warriors into their offense. Chris Paul can do that off the bench. So I think in some ways it could be a win. It could be an upgrade for them if they do it right. And I think that's got to be a couple other moves coming down, but you know, between now and the All-Star break, between now and trade deadline or something like that, if they're really going to be a true contender. But I think Chris Paul sets it up for them to at least be a more efficient team with their second unit. You sit there and look at a couple other teams. You know, we talked about the Clippers for a quick minute. Phoenix, we know what they've done. I like some of the other moves that they have made. I really do to fill out their bench. That was a huge concern. And I think they've done well in bringing in small contract players that should help their bench really good. So maybe they're a team that can next season that can give Denver some, give them a little bit of competition again. I still think Denver's the best team out there in the West right now. But we'll see how all that plays out. Anyway, man, we're going to take another quick break. We'll come back for my last segment when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all. We're going to close out this particular episode of Ball About the South. This is the 48th episode, by the way. 48th. We're two away from the Big Five. Oh, I just thought I'd throw that out there. And, man, it's crazy to sit here and think that I'm at this point. But really appreciate everyone that listens to the show, everyone that's subscribed on Spotify or Apple or whatever. Really appreciate it. And, man, to sit there and get the Big 5-0 and the number of episodes will be fantastic. And we should hit that here in the next couple of weeks. We're going to have a lot going on the show. We're going to be talking a lot of football, of course, here coming up soon. We're going to continue with this NBA talk, of course. But this we're about to get into college football, huge NFL as well. And a lot of talk about the Tennessee Titans. We're still waiting on this DeAndre Hopkins thing, if we're able to land him. Really hoping that turns out to be the case, but we'll see what happens. But again, we got a lot to talk about. We have the players set for the SEC Media Days going up to Nashville next week. Alabama does not have a guy like Jalen Milroe, which is not surprising. And obviously, if we had Jalen Milroe headed to Nashville, then I think that would be Nick Saban tipping his cap that Jalen Milroe would be the starting quarterback or whatever. So, don't have a quarterback. You have QBs like Spencer Rattler and South Carolina Gamecocks on his way to Nashville next week. Will Rogers of the Mississippi State Bulldogs on his way up to Nashville next week. We'll be talking about that. We're talking about some of the sound bites or whatever that we get from the coaches there at Media Days next week when I come to you with this next episode. It's coming up, man. It's coming fast. This year is just flying away, and we're going to be talking big-time football. Baseball is really heating up as well. The two best teams in baseball right now, we'll talk a little bit here and there. We talked a little bit about the All-Star game early on in my opening segment today. We'll talk a little baseball here and there. The Atlanta Braves, who sent 7 players to the All-Star game, which is just insane. Or was it 6? It was 6 or 7. And you sit there and look at all those guys that played last night. Acuna Jr., of course, who's really, I think, an MVP candidate right now, leading off for the National League last night. They've got the pitching. The hitting is ridiculous. You got to have guys like Ozzy Albies hitting down in the lineup with 22 home runs. I mean, an unbelievably powerful lineup. And then, like I said, the two best teams in baseball, the other team is Tampa Bay Rays. They're still leading the American League East. They still have the best record in the American League. The Braves went down to Tampa last weekend and took 2 out of 3 from them, but those teams could be on a collision course. We should see. But then again, baseball always has a way of not turning out, you know, the best teams to get to the World Series. Most times, we don't see that. So, and more than likely, we'll probably be headed towards something like that again this time around. But we'll see what happens. But we'll talk a little baseball here and there, especially with those two teams doing what they're doing. And you sit there and you look at it, man. The next team in line in the National League East, you would think it would be the Phillies or the Mets. No, it is the Miami Marlins. They have been doing their thing as well. So they are a team that needs to be watched as well. Again, a lot going on in the sports world, and we're going to do our best to bring it to you the best way we can. Again, this is episode 48. We're going to come at you with episode 49 next up, and then we'll do something for episode 50 here in a couple weeks. And I just want you to come along for the ride. Please remember to like, subscribe, share, comment, do all those things, and let me know what you think about Ball About the South. And also let others know as well. Anyway, my name is Kerry Wicker. Find me on Instagram, Twitter, and now Threads. Are you on Threads? I am. at Seawood on Sports. I also have a Twitter, Ball About the South. Just look that up. It's on there. I have that on there, too. I've not done a lot of tweeting on that username, but I will here in the future. Follow me at both of those. And, again, just really look forward to you guys joining me again next week. And until then, man, I am